Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, our star, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
So, Ken, we talk about state politics here a lot. I notice that Cuomo is meeting privately with the legislative leaders, and he did that before releasing his $152.3 billion budget. Do we know what's in it?
Yeah, we do now, or we know some of it. They put it out Tuesday night late. He's calling for $1 billion more in school aid, $163 million to help fund or to fund his free public college tuition program for those making up to $125,000, those households. It's got Medicaid increase of 2.9%, school aid increase 4.1%. Things that you wouldn't expect necessarily in a budget, like he's proposing allowing the sale of beer and wine at movie theaters. There's Uber expansion for upstate. There's ethics reforms. Again, not expected in a budget, but there they are.
Now, how much of this is positioning himself for a fight to set up the Senate Republicans?
I don't think he's positioning himself for a fight. I think there's two real big points of contention with the Senate Republicans at this point. One is the governor is looking to continue the so-called millionaire's tax, a tax surcharge on the wealthy, that in 2011 Cuomo said he was going to let expire. But now this week he said it is important to renew it because the state's facing a $3.5 billion deficit. This is not only going to help close that deficit, but it's going to help fund programs like college tuition and school aid increases and all the rest that he's proposing.
Well, as we speak now, Ken Lovett of the Daily News, he's on his way up as we speak this moment to talk to the president-elect of the United States, Donald J. Trump, who is not a person who believes in millionaire taxes.
No, I doubt, though, you know, Trump will get into that level. My guess is they're going to talk about things that the state is facing. So the governor said on Tuesday night he's going to talk to him about homelessness and the need for federal housing money. He's going to talk to him about the potential impacts if there's a repeal of Obamacare and what that would mean for Medicaid and the uninsured.
What would it mean?
Well, if it's a full repeal with no replacement, the governor says it would cost the state $3.7 billion. The comptroller told me a few weeks ago it would actually be closer to $5.7 billion. That's if there's no replacement. The president-elect has said that there would be, so we have no idea. Interestingly enough, the governor has not budgeted at all any contingency plan for if Obamacare is repealed. I get that they don't know what's going to happen, but it seems odd that they're not even, you know, budgeting for the possibility that there's going to be a fiscal impact of that move. He's going to talk to him about infrastructure. The governor's big on building things, and the president-elect, soon to be president, says he's going to propose a $1 trillion infrastructure program, so they're going to talk about that. Interestingly enough, less than 24 hours before this meeting, the governor was in with the Senate Democrats, briefing them on the budget very quietly, privately. And it came
Senate
up.
Senate Democrats in the state or Senate Democrats up in Washington?
In the state.
Okay.
And he referred to Trump as a lunatic. He says it's hard to budget for a lunatic. So it's interesting that he would say that even privately and not expect it to get out as he's going to meet with said lunatic.
No, I want to talk to you about that because this governor, many people, including me, think if he could, he'd run for president. And obviously he's got to keep his partisans happy with his coming down hard on Trump. On the other hand, he needs Trump desperately if he's going to keep this state going. So how do you do that?
That's a good question. And, you know, I had a column this past Monday, a upstate Utica state senator, Joseph Griffo. He had said that, you know, that Cuomo and to a lesser extent de Blasio in New York City, the mayor and Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, they're going to hurt the state more than help it if they just keep trying to become and outdo each other to be the anti-Trump. He says, you know, you expect to have differences of opinion on policy, and that's fine to discuss. But to just go after the guy who hasn't even been inaugurated yet, we haven't seen what he's doing yet. You know, he feels, Griffo, that could hurt the state, that, you know, that there could be backlash from the feds on that, especially Trump. And why that makes a difference is Trump's from New York. So Grifo's argument is, for the first time since FDR, you know, in the World War II era, we have a president who's from New York. We also have a Senate minority leader in Chuck Schumer who's from New York. So New York is poised to at least get some attention. And Grifo's argument is, if you're just trying to be the anti-Trump to set yourself up as an alternative potentially for 2020, you could in fact be hurting the state.
So if we're trying to get inside of Cuomo's head, we might just see that he'll have a difficult time balancing those two buckets on either of his shoulders, trying to keep from having spilling anything.
Well, yes, but, I mean, you know, it's kind of the wheelhouse of the governor to be in the middle there. You know, he's always tried to be a more fiscally moderate slash conservative and more socially progressive. And even in his attacks on Trump publicly, he very rarely mentions him by name. He'll talk about policies, you know, we're going to protect a woman's right to choose, we're going to protect immigrants, we're going to be a safe haven against federal policies that we think, you know, endanger people. But he hasn't really ripped Trump. And don't forget, after Trump was elected, Cuomo spoke to him by phone the next day. And he actually upset some liberals and Democrats when he said that having a president from New York could be a bonus. He said there are issues like infrastructure where this could be a big benefit for New York. But he has since, after he took a little heat for that, gone back to attacking him for the social policies.
In fact, I want to talk to you about that, Ken. Clearly, when he became the governor, he was almost, if for want of a better word, Clintonian in his move to the right and upsetting a lot of people, school teachers and others. Now I get the feeling we got a liberal on our hands. Why is he doing that?
Well, I don't, you know, why is he doing that is Zephyr Teachout in 2014, who was a nobody Democrat and Working Families Party, who really put a scare into him with a primary. And the left has been against him. So since really the 2014 election, he's been trying to win back the left. I'm not quite sure I'd say we have a liberal. Certainly he's talking more like a liberal. You know, I think the argument, people always try to make the comparison that he's like his father, you know, the former governor Mario Cuomo. No, he was always more like his former boss in Bill Clinton.
Couldn't agree more.
He was certainly, he's someone, his political strategy is not an ideology. He likes to triangulate. He wants to be in the center and kind of bring things back together. I think that's still there because even if you look at his budget, you know, there's a lot of progressive stuff in there. But on the other hand, he's capping, you know, state spending at 2%. He's you know, doing various things now. You're hearing more talk about the middle class because I think that's the lesson a lot of Democrats took from the national election. So he calls this a middle class agenda for his budget. You know, there's going to be middle class tax cuts that they approved last year that are going through. He says, you know, we're going to not get rid of the taxes on millionaires, but certainly there's still he's still fiscally on the conservative side of things.
So Ken Lovett,
moderate side of things.
Ken Lovett, what's really going on here? He's taking on, I think, full frontal assault with the legislature. He didn't give them the pay raise that they wanted. They're mad at him. He's mad at them. And now he decides not even giving a state of the state in the traditional way, either in the assembly chamber or down in the mammoth hall that he has been doing it in sometimes. And he went around the state. And now he's got to come up with a budget with these people. What's going to happen?
Well, look, ultimately they have to get it done. Whether it'll be late or not, we'll see how mad the legislature really is. Because, you know, his pride and joy is six timely state budgets. He feels that shows that government is functioning effectively. But he's got to deal with them. And look, a lot of people feel the reason he didn't give a state of the state address to the legislature, that he took it on the road, and the reason he also broke tradition and didn't give a budget address, a public budget address to the legislature, instead he briefed them privately, is he didn't want to be booed and hissed or be the subject of a legislative boycott. He doesn't take that well. And last year during his state of the state, an assemblyman from Brooklyn, Charles Barron, started screaming at him, heckling him over the campaign for fiscal equity school aid lawsuit and the funding that he believes is needed for public schools, particularly in New York City. Cuomo didn't want a repeat of that. He certainly didn't want...
But didn't Barron come off as the nut in that?
Yes, but what the fear was this time was there would be more people who would be viewed more credibly who would either heckle or just wouldn't show up. And if half the legislature or more boycotted, that would have been the story. It would have stepped all over a state of the state. So he took it to the road. He took, you know, look, he's different from his father that way. You know, his father used to walk up to protesters. His father used to go back at lawmakers who went after him. Andrew Cuomo doesn't. You know, when there were protesters of the state of the state his first year, he then erected barriers in the concourse at the Capitol complex. He put up all these booths showing New York items and New York issues. But it separated the protesters away from him. He doesn't like to go up to them. In that way, he's also different than his father.
Ken Lovett, obviously, there has been no love lost between this governor and the mayor of New York, de Blasio. Do I sense a little bit of a rapprochement?
Look, we just got the budget as we speak, you know, a little more than 12 hours ago. But I don't sense that there's anything in there that is a direct attack on the mayor of the city of New York like last year. Last year, the governor, and he hit it, and we dug it out, and it became a story for a few days, and the governor had to backtrack. But last year, he tried to shift $800 million in funding, including a little less than $500 million in CUNY funding that the state was responsible for. He tried to shift it onto the city. And de Blasio went crazy. The Assembly Democrats beat it back. But I don't see any of that kind of machinations behind the scenes yet.
But of course, there's always this business about mayoral control of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And he is recommending, as I understand it, in this budget, 3 years.
Yes.
As opposed to the 1 year they've been parsimoniously giving to the mayor in terms of controlling education. Doesn't that represent a little bit of a fallback?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because last year, at the height of their hostilities, they...
Either one works.
The mayor wanted first an unlimited extension of mayoral control, and then he asked for 7 years. The governor proposed 3 years, like he is now. The Senate, who also hates the mayor, the Senate Republicans wouldn't budge over one. The governor didn't fight it, and neither really did the Assembly Democrats, because they're not big fans of mayoral control in the first place. And so he ended up with 1 year. So the question will be what the Senate Republicans will do, and will the governor go to the mat this time? The feeling is he's not going to go to the mat on this issue.
So let's go to the Senate Republicans. Obviously, they're aided and abetted by the Independent Democratic Conference, which you call the Independent Democratic Conference, and which I call the traitors, and another so-called traitor in Simca Felder, who runs as a Democrat, this time also as a Republican. And do they have any sense of the contempt that the legislature is being held in because of the lack of ethics reform?
Are they being held with contempt? If you look at the polls, you say yes, but then these guys all get reelected. So I don't know how much it really resonates, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, if you want to send a message, you vote people out and say we're not happy about this. But it's just not an issue. Look, the Senate Democrats made ethics a huge issue, especially on Long Island, where, you had a lot of Dean Skelos, the former majority leader, was convicted of corruption charges. The county executive right before the election and a local town supervisor, they got hit with corruption charges. And yet the Republicans, you know, the Democrats did pick up the Skelos seat in a special election. They kept it. They did pick up a seat they didn't even try for at first. A guy, Michael Venditto, the Republican, lost because his father, only a couple of weeks before, was nailed with corruption. He was a town of Oyster Bay supervisor. So John Brooks became the new senator from Oyster Bay. But that really was probably because that conviction, that arrest just happened a few weeks prior. But if you look, you know, the incumbents all won, really. It's just very, Venditto was the only one who lost. So I'm not sure people, they say they don't like it. They say they want to clean up Albany. They say they hate the legislature, but then they always vote for their guy.
And maybe it is that they also don't have any great confidence that the people on the other side of the aisle have any more of an ethics standard than the Republicans do. That certainly is a possibility. So where do we stand? We have a Senate that hates the governor. We have an Assembly which pretty much hates the governor. We have a governor who's setting them both all up by making proposals which I suspect he thinks he won't get done, and he can say they did it. Where do we stand?
That's where we stand. I mean, you could almost, other than the heightened hatred these days, you could say it's a typical budget process. I don't think this budget will be as big of a lift as some of the other ones. He hasn't put as many controversial items in, but as I said, you know, the Republicans are going to try and stop the extension of the millionaire's tax. The Assembly Democrats not only want to extend it, but expand it. They feel that the rich should pay more. So that's going to be a big bone of contention. The Republicans have raised questions about the governor's free tuition program for public colleges and universities. But in the end, I can't imagine they'll block it. There may be changes, or maybe they'll involve some private institutions, but I can't imagine they're going to block a free tuition plan. And we'll see where the others, as they go through the budgets and we hold the budget hearings, we'll see where the points of contention are. Look, he offered up $1 billion in school spending, and we all know the legislature is going to add on to it. So that's a good starting base. You know, you've been around a long time.
Sure.
We've seen governors pitch cuts. We've seen Pataki once pitched $300 million increase. So $1 billion, even John Flanagan, the Senate Majority Leader, who is considering a run against Cuomo for governor in 2018, even he said that was a very good starting point.
Could Flanagan beat the governor?
I'm not sure Flanagan can win a primary in his own party. Don't forget, mm-hmm. Flanagan voted for the SAFE Act, you know, the governor's gun control law. That in itself would make it very difficult for him to win a primary upstate.
Okay, I guess I wanted to talk to you about an offbeat story. The State Conservative Party wants the new Tappan Zee Bridge named after victims of the 1981 armored truck robbery. I think I know what's going on here. Go ahead.
Yeah, the governor surprised a lot of people when he gave clemency to Judith Clark, you know, who was the getaway driver in the Brinks robbery. She had been serving time in prison. She's been in for over 35 years, and she was facing parole when she became 106 years old. Right now, she's like 62 or 67. And so the governor said she's been really good behind bars. She has expressed remorse, and she should be able to appear before the parole board. That upset a lot of people. The cops, the families of those who were killed, the security guards and the two NIAC cops. And so now, I guess almost thumbing a nose at the governor, State Conservative Party Chairman Michael Long says, we should name the bridge after them. Because, you know, that's how you can honor these three people who died as a result of the robbery.
He, of course, has an out. The governor, doesn't he? Because if he winks at the parole board and the parole board doesn't let her out, that would mean he thinks he's in some trouble over this.
Absolutely. You know, all he said is it's giving her a chance to make her case before the parole board. But the reality is I can't remember a time when someone granted clemency was not given parole. So it would be really shocking. But if that's the message he sends, that this is hurting him politically, that's going to blow up in his face, too, because there are a lot of people in his own party who support this move.
Yeah. Okay. Now, he has a pain in the rump, Cuomo does, called Stephanie Miner, who is the mayor of Syracuse. What does her future look like?
Well, her term is up, and she's been term limited out in Syracuse, so this is her last time.
But she's had a lot of courage taking him
she
on.
She has. Don't forget, she was at one point a co-chairwoman of the state party,
right,
selected by
him,
Andrew Cuomo. And then she was too independent. She actually spoke out against his budget and said how certain plans would hurt, you know, her city of Syracuse. And she wrote an op-ed for the New York Times saying that. And he, of course, did not like that. She left, you know, a little while later. And she's been a frequent public critic. When there weren't too many people like there are now,
sure,
when people were afraid to put their names on the quotes, she was putting her names on the quotes. People have mentioned possibly she can run for governor. I think that would be a tough...
She would have to primary him.
Yeah. And
it would
be
tough to see her beating basically a New York guy.
It would be tough to beat a New York guy. The guy, as of Wednesday, he reported having $22 million in the bank. It's tough to beat that. So I can't imagine that. Some people have said maybe she'll run for Congress, but I don't think her political career is over. She's very smart. She's very well-liked up there.
I like her. I can tell you that much. Now, what about what's going on with DiNapoli, the comptroller, who is another guy I like a lot? It's interesting. Cuomo has this small problem of a couple of federal trials coming up with his, quote, third brother, Joe Prococo, and Todd Howe and Elaine Calieros, all facing a trial. His name obviously is going to be brought up in those trials.
Not only brought up, but he may end up, he even said he could be called to testify.
And what do you think that means?
Look, you know, I wrote a couple weeks ago that I think 2017 could be a make-or-break year for Andrew Cuomo politically. You know, look, he's talked about running potentially for president in 2020. He says he's going to run for re-election in 2018, but he's got to get past this year. And you look across the border and see what the Bridgegate trial did to Chris Christie, yeah. the governor there. Now, Chris Christie, much like Andrew Cuomo, was not charged criminally with anything. He was not criminally implicated. But that trial and the convictions of two people who were close to him set Christie's numbers, they plummeted to the lowest levels ever. And that could happen with Cuomo. And if it does, if these trials go through and there's no pleas beforehand, if embarrassing revelations come out for weeks, you know, for several weeks or more, that could really, really hurt the governor. And if he has to testify, that could certainly hurt the governor.
But I want to go back to DiNapoli for a moment, a controller who, as I said, I have great regard for. This guy had a schnook way down in his bureaucracy who turns out to be a crook. So Cuomo, now having to defend his best friends up for trial for the life, says, yeah, well, I've had trouble and so has DiNapoli, which is ridiculous because they're not the same level of equivalency.
It's not the same level. I mean, the guy wasn't a low-level guy, but he wasn't the comptroller's top aides. You know, this wasn't an Alan Hevesy scandal where the former comptroller had his chief of staff, his chief investment officer, his chief political guy all involved in it. This was one guy who seemingly acted alone. There's been no indication that DiNapoli knew or anyone else knew what he was doing, and he was let go prior to the charges. So it is different, but certainly now Cuomo, who for the first time is at least recognizing it when he's talked about the need for ethics reform, for the first time he's at least talking that it's hit his office. He won't even say his office. He says it's hit the comptroller's office, it's hit the legislature, and it's hit the executive branch. And sometimes he'll say my office.
Give me a break, will you please?
But it's more than the executive branch. And it's even more than his office. It's as close to him as you can get with a guy like Joe Prococo and even a Todd Howe, who was a longtime family associate.
That's exactly right. Now, Ken Lovett, let's go to your work on marijuana. The governor says pot possession shouldn't land New Yorkers in jail as he wraps up his State of the State tour. So it's one thing to legalize it. It's another to say, okay, well, you smoke it, but you shouldn't go to jail.
Yes, and he's against, he says, legalizing recreationally like they did in Massachusetts, like they've done in California and a number of other states. But he says that they should decriminalize. So if you sell, it would still be a crime. But if you
have,
if you're caught with possession and it's a small amount, he hasn't deemed this year what that would be, then it would just be a violation and it wouldn't go on your record.
What's he up to?
Well, he's proposed this before. I think he feels that, it helps. You know, that's a big cause on the liberal side of the aisle. They say that people are needlessly getting criminal records for something that is considered minor. And so I think he has said he agrees with that philosophy. And I take him on his word at that. I don't know how much he's going to push for it, however, because the Republicans certainly in the Senate are not for it. And while it was in his budget, in his State of the State policy book, he never mentioned it once during his six speeches.
Do people know, and we only have a minute, but do people know what a cesspool Albany is?
You know, I think they do, which shows why they have such little regard for Albany. But rather than getting angry, I think it's turning them off. And I think they're just becoming tuned out to everything.
So what's the answer?
You know, you'd rather have an informed populace that paid attention and voted and came out to vote. And if people were doing wrong, got rid of them.
But if we mentioned Donald Trump on our call-in show here at Public Radio, every line is used. If we talk about state government or Cuomo or anything else, nobody cares.
People's eyes glaze over. They don't get it. And I think they've just really become detached. And all these crimes, you know, the stat I always like to give, in 2014, four people, sitting lawmakers, ran for re-election, a congressman and three assembly and senators. All four got re-elected, and then all four had to leave office because they got convicted. That used to be a disqualifying factor. Now people can get elected under indictment.
Our guest has been the columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, widely recognized as the top newsman when it comes to state politics, Ken Lovett. Ken, thanks again for joining us.
Always fun. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.